Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
You are at the interview part of the show. Today we are talking horror, and we've got a great guest. He's done a lot of books, and it should be interesting. So thank you for being here, Scott Gorsak.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. Hey, so how did you get involved in writing horror? Like, where did that come from?
You know, I always liked writing in high school. I had some fantastic teachers, which really fueled my passion for storytelling. And I guess it really caught fire when I used to watch movies, you know, during the old days when Creature Feature was on Friday nights and all the scary shows. And I'd sit back and go, that was a really good story. And then I'd go, but if he had done this, and basically being a armchair quarterback for movies kind of got me to put myself on the spot and go, you know what, shut up and do it yourself. So I started putting my thoughts down on paper and going from there and creating stories that amused me. And then Stephen King came along and introduced the world to Clive Barker. And I really got hooked on Clive Barker's writing. And it probably was a meeting way back in 1993 when Clive was on tour with his comic books that I was able to meet him. And he really turned me to the dark side. It was great. We went there for a signing he was having. And I guess he wasn't at his height of popularity because within 30, 40 people, the place was empty. And there I was, just all the time in the world to have a conversation with Mr. Barker. And it was great.
Wow. That's pretty influential, you know. But I noticed a lot of your books, they're pretty dark, much darker than the old Scarefest shows. Is there a reason for that?
You know, it goes back to I don't remember who the quote was from. It might have even been Edgar Allan Poe stating that there is no finer emotion than fear. And because it gets the body in gear, it gets your blood pumping, it gets all your dark emotions rolling, your brain goes into gear, and you're going, what now? And so I found that it just satisfied me mentally to start writing the darker stories. My kids growing up will tell you that it was a bit of an influence on them because I used to tell them bedtime stories, and it quite wasn't the fairy tale most people would imagine. stories like Goldilocks and the Three Vampires, it never ended well. The blood-sucking mushrooms. And to this day, my kids are all in their late teens and in their early 20s, and every once in a while at a holiday meal, the kids will ask me to repeat some of these stories because they still recall them after all these years.
Well, there you go. Father of the Year.
Well, we survived. There was no therapy involved in any of my children through those formative years.
Yeah, I'm sure it's fine. So, like, I just wonder, so what is it you look for in a good horror story? Like, what are the important elements that you like to put in your own as well as read in others?
Originality. And what I mean by this is, I'll write a story two or three times, and if I'm unhappy with it or I find something it resembles, I'll throw it away. And I like new, and it's got to be fresh. You know, so many authors today will write along the lines of what's the most popular wave going on. And I understand that, and they want people to read them. But I find that if you're riding the popular wave, you're blending in with the crowd. It's a story that a reader will pick up and read. They'll enjoy it, but then they'll kind of forget about it later.
Right.
Where I'm striving, when I put a story down on paper, to be the next wave. And, you know, if you look back to the 70s, Stephen King is the one that brought horror back to the public interest. Because for a while there, it was pretty quiet. And then Clive Barker kicked in with his generation of horror readers, because their stories were both very fresh and new. You will seldom see me submit to an anthology because the anthologies tend to be theme. The stories tend to be the same subject. And the way I write is I write when the thought comes to me, so that I have no distraction. I take the story from my mind, I put it down. I'm not trying to please an editor or a publisher to fit in to that genre that the anthology is part of. So if it's zombies, I'm not going to just sit down and write a zombie story. If it's a ghost story, I'm not motivated to just write a ghost story because I find that I'm sacrificing the writing. Whereas when I'm out and about traveling or in my office and a thought comes to me and I create the story there, it's a higher quality. Because I'm not trying to reach somebody's parameters to fit in. So I may take a story that I write in my office and shelve it for a few years, and if an anthology comes up that it'll fit into. I'll submit it because I haven't been tainted in any way. I've truly written and submitting the best thing I can for that anthology.
That's pretty interesting. When you put together a story, how do you know if it's going to work or not? Like in your mind, when you start to put together, you have some original idea, and you start to get into, you know, doing the outline and all this stuff. Are there times when you kind of get things that you just put away and say, no, that doesn't work?
You know, if I get a really good idea, I'll just write it down and submit it into my idea file, and I'll come back to it when I'm in the zone. Recently, I started writing a story, and I knew it was something I was passionate about because by the time I looked up from the computer screen, I had already written 5,000 words, uninterrupted.
That's a good sign.
Pretty much when I know I'm on the right track. And there's probably no given time where I probably have 50 stories running at once. And at the moment, I have those 50 short stories and 4 novels working at the same time.
Wow.
And
that's a lot.
I won't sit there and just work on one because, oh, I want to get it done. It has to be thought-driven. It has to be intelligent. And it has to work. So if I work for an hour or two on a project and I burn myself out of, you know, creative fuel, I just save the work and put it aside. Because if I pick that work up 2 weeks from now, I may get different thoughts that will start adding to the story. I don't let timelines and rushing compromise the work.
Is there a certain atmosphere or a place you have to be when you write this type of work?
No, believe it or not, I no longer carry a pen and pad in my car since cell phones have recorders on them, but I have a dream diary near the bed. I used to carry an old cassette recorder in my car. And you never know when a good idea is going to hit you, when you're driving down the road or you see some observation of life around you that you feel, hey, that could be a really good idea. So whatever interests me is or catches me intellectually that I can't let go of, that's when I know I have a good idea.
That's interesting. What do you want people to get out of your books when they read them? So, you know, a person comes in, picks up your book and goes, okay. And is there something you want them to walk away with?
The main goal is to entertain, to invoke emotion. A lot of my stories aren't just horror. You'll find yourself laughing. You'll find yourself crying. You'll find the fear in it. But I guess my main goal is when somebody reads one of my stories, the true compliment is that they pick it up and read it again, not put the book down and forget about it.
So, and it's pretty layered too. So each time you read it, you'll pick up something new usually, don't you?
You know, Stephen King, I don't mean to use him so much, but, you know, he set down a really good foundation for horror writers. The problem is he wrote about almost everything in the world, and to find a fresh idea is taxing. So, you know, you could pretty much find Stephen King's written almost anything about everything at one time or another in his career, and I have to applaud him for that. But without Stephen King and Lovecraft and other authors in the past, I feel a lot of the horror writers today wouldn't be where they're at because they got a whole generation reading again scary things, and that's the goal. That's what we all want. And probably the best example of what I don't want to do is very much along the lines of what Hollywood is doing right now. Hollywood is trading money for satisfying the moviegoers' need. And what I mean by this is we have sequels and prequels and remakes coming out every year. And I spoke to a few colleagues in Hollywood, and I asked them what was going on. And they said, it's simple. The investors in a movie look at taking a film that's already being done. It takes a minimal amount of money to do it, maybe $5 million. And they know that they're guaranteed a $15 million box office. So they're happy because they didn't lose money on a project. And they're missing the point of what their customers want. And that's the customers want something different. If you look at a lot of movies that don't cost a lot of money, Blair Witch Project, probably cost under $2,500 to make, and it was a box office smash, and it created a sequel, and I'm told in the next few months we may even see a remake of the film. Another great example of the public looking for something different would be the Paranormal Activity film. I think that one was also filmed and produced for under $2,500. I think the majority of the money went to renting the movie cameras and renting the condominium that it was filmed in. But that was, I don't have the figures right in front of me, but if you look it up, it was another box office smash, and it produced 6 sequels. So for a movie that costs less than $2,500, the movie-going public wanted to see it, and they showed it. And both of these movies produced probably over 900% profit. So it's not how much or conforming to what's popular right now. It's what's fresh and new that the public is really looking for, whether you're doing a movie or writing a book, and the sales don't lie.
So you think the idea is the most important thing?
Yes.
I wonder, do you believe in the paranormal and all that? Is that sort of a big influence for you?
Yes, and a new story I'm working on right now. My daughter's college dorm is haunted, and I had a slight experience there where I was helping her pack to come home for the summer, and we were upstairs collecting her belongings, and I heard my car keys fly across the floor and hit the wall, and I had left them on a chair in the living room. So somehow or another, my keys ended up moving across the whole room and came to rest in the kitchen. And when I researched her dormitory, I discovered that her dorm was supposedly built on an old Indian burial ground in North Jersey. And a lot of paranormal happenings have been told by many students who lived in this dormitory, everything from scratching on windows on the second floor to shadow men appearing in the hallways and things falling off of shelves. along with the lights flickering, which I also saw while I was there. So I'm going to have to say yes.
Well, I was just wondering, because there's so much, well, it's calming down now, but there were so many television shows and ghost hunters and all this stuff going on. Do you take part in that, or does that influence you, or are you talking about more just live experiences?
More live experiences. I don't watch those shows on television, only because I really got tired of them not finding anything.
Yeah.
I found it very disappointing.
They're always hunting and never catching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could do that same thing in my house.
Well, yeah, I know, really. So how does this, you know, I interview a lot of authors and writers, and some stay away and don't read anything in their own category, as they don't want to be influenced in what they're writing. So, and others don't. So during your process, when you are writing or in the process of putting a book together, do you stay away from other horrors and movies and shows and books?
I stay away from the modern works. I'm a big fan of the classics, Dracula, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, because it was a totally different writing pattern as what we have today. But when you're reading somebody like Edgar Allan Poe, it's just such a fantastic experience. His vocabulary, his thoughts are just, quite honestly, I don't think anyone's caught up to Edgar Allan Poe yet. I think he's that far ahead of his game. But I like the old classics, and when I want to sit down and read something, I like to go to the used bookstores, and I picked up a book called The Haunted Omnibus, and when I looked at the copyright, it was probably 1920. So those are the stories I like to read right now.
What do you think the writers are not as good nowadays? Do you think their vocabulary and grammar and things like that are just not to the standard? You could even say that about the general population. Do you think overall we're just at a lower standard than we should be?
No, but it goes along with what I've been saying. When I'm reading the classics, I'm reading something fresh, including their writing styles. When you're talking about today and modern authors, I think they're all very similar in their styles. But I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But for me and being entertained, I like the older books.
So now, with your books, what was your favorite one to do, or what was your favorite one to talk about, out of all the different books you've done and compilations and stories?
Wow, that's rough, Alan. There are just so many stories I've written.
Well, did one change you? Like you know, that's another angle. So when you wrote it and after you finished it and put it out, did it actually make a change in something about you?
I'm going to have to tell you that most of the stories have an emotional attachment to them. And what I mean by this is my wife will walk into my office and just find me absolutely bawling my eyes out, because I've written such a powerful scene that it just moved me so much. I'm trying to think of the one that really affected me the most. Again, I don't have the title on the top of my head. It's silly that
No, I understand. I understand totally, because I write and I get interviewed, and a lot of times it's something I did 5, 10 years ago, and it's kind of, I kind of sometimes don't remember.
I wrote a story about a guy leaving his child with his father. And basically the father, the guy goes away on his business trip to return to find his father wandering through the yard after suffering a stroke. The problem is his 5-year-old daughter is missing. The story's called Field of Shrieks. Without giving too much of the story away, I'm going to have to give a bit of it away. The daughter is never found again. The son inherits the properties that his father owns. Father goes into a nursing home. And at one of these properties, the author finds out that his father is a serial killer and has taken the lives of his mother, his prom date, and probably his daughter. And as he goes through the property, he ends up digging up some shallow graves and releasing spirits that point out where the other victims are. That one was very emotional.
So when you say emotional and stuff, is it tied to the characters themselves, or is it just the story?
I try to write believable and very deep characters. So I'm writing it from the character's opinion, and as he's discovering the victims of his father who raised him as a child, as a single.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Parent, he's conflicted with the man he knew and the man he's learning he was. And each one of his victims' spirits communicates with him as they're exhumed from their graves. So it's very emotional, some of the things that are exchanged between the victim and our main character.
So you get really involved emotionally in the story.
That's my goal, to bring that out in the reader. So if I'm able to do that, knowing with what I'm putting on paper, I can only hope that I'm giving the reader that same experience.
So these characters, where do they come from for you? Because these are fictional characters, and so do they come from people that you know or have met, have seen, or is it complete imagination? And with these characters, how do you develop them? Like, how do you make them go through the process of, and where does that come from, where you put things on these characters and decide how they're going to act and react and get into their mental status? So, characters.
Most of them are fictional, but there are a few people in there, and they know who they are, that are acquaintances of mine. And some of them in there may have done something negative to me at one time or not, and they appear as a victim. Or if they're a good friend, they come through the story all the way. So, but believe it or not, a lot of it's just observations of life around us. We all see different characters and personalities in our everyday life. So I just build on that. And my goal is to never have somebody put a story down and go, that was okay. I want them to read the next story and the next story. Off the top of your head, let me ask you, Alan, how many modern-day authors are making an impression with you when you read their work?
Modern-day, well, there's not too many. There's a few. But I'm dealing in true crime.
Okay.
So it depends on the type of story. You have to deal with a lot of truth. So there's and the characters, you can't really decide how they would react or act or what they do. They sort of have already done what they've done, and you're kind of stuck with that. So
yeah.
I think it's more about if you can add the hardest thing with that is putting a voice to take you through the whole story and the whole crime. So I take people like, who was that? Truman Capote, right? When he did his book, the big book he did, In Cold Blood, he had a way of putting a voice to what had happened and walking you through the whole thing. And that's the hardest thing to do in true crime. And most of the books I read or listen to miss that.
Right. You know, I find if the author has done their job and described the character to the point where you can relate to them, you have a good story. I've used this phrase before, reality horror, with my writing, because I write things that the reader can relate to is happening to them for real. Not some of the hokey slasher movies where the killer never dies. So I like to leave that little threat in their mind that they just read this story. Could it happen to them? Could it be the guy walking down the street looking at them as they walk past? Can you trust him? I always like to keep the reader involved. And if you do a story in such a way, that story carries on with the reader after they're done with it.
So what other things influence you when you put the writers and horror movies and all that aside, what else in life has a big influence on you?
Wow. I think it's just coming across a lot of ideas when I'm out and about in the world. Right now, I've got two or three hotel stories I've written, and it's because for my real-time job, I travel a lot. So I'll notice who the person is behind the counter when I check in. And then there's a few things that just come together, and the question always comes to me, and I say, what if? And you never know what if. And I've applied that in many different scenarios with some of my stories. And I go from there. Believe it or not, I've even looked at some of these anthologies that are put out. And I'll think, hey, that was a really great theme. I'm not ready to write something just for that now. And I'll put it away. And I'll start a story on it and finish it. One day it'll be for somebody else's info, or it'll go into one of my short story collections. So they don't all come from me. I do pick up ideas along the way, but generally I think it's the ideas that come to me when I'm out and about in the world.
So if you get a lot of it from people you come across or meet, like the hotel check-in person and taxi drivers or whatever, when things like what's happened in the recent times, you know, with the COVID and now the riots and stuff, so all of the turmoil going on, does that stop you from writing? And if it doesn't, does it make you write even darker or from a darker point of view?
Well, with the whole COVID thing, how many virus movies have we already seen done?
Right. Oh, yeah.
I was just watching the Dustin Hoffman one that was on television this afternoon. I mean, if it's been done already, I'm not going to touch it. I'm going to walk away because after being quarantined, I live in New Jersey, and our governor shut our state down. It's still shut down, but I self-quarantined for 45 days. And I'm more likely to write a story about my quarantine time with my wife and four daughters than I am to write about COVID.
Yeah, but that in itself, does it, even if you're writing another story, you got nothing to do with the virus itself or a virus story. You're writing a story, you're starting it, you got an idea and you're starting to write, and all of a sudden something like this happens where it becomes very, you know, dark or scary or tragic in the world. Does that affect the story that you're writing on?
Not at all. Because I usually find that, you know, other than picking out characters and things like that from the world, I'm not a real, how do I put it? I try to stay away from the craziness, and you and I were just talking about it, about politics and other world tragedies that go on, because I can almost guarantee you, after this whole COVID-19 is done and dissipated, you and I are going to see dozens of virus stories come out in the next 90 days. And after being self-quarantined and things like that with the public, do you think they really want to read more of that right now?
I hope not. But
I think they're tired of it. I think they want something fresh, something that's going to distract them from the problems of the world right now. So I think authors should write something different to entertain their public right now, other than giving them the status quo of what's going on in the world.
Yeah. What are your biggest challenges then?
Having too many thoughts at once. And I mean that wholeheartedly, because with four novels in various stages of completion, one of them's at 600 pages, and I would have to tell you it's not even half done. It's a historical thriller involving the New Jersey Devil. and I've written all the early 1700s, 1800s. I'm into the 1900s now, and I have a whole cast of villains for modern day that will all hook into everything I've already written. So, and the other thing is I'm looking at 45 short story ideas that I've started, and I just keep chiseling away at them. And I'm getting ready to finish my next short story collection called Gossamer. And I'm probably half a story away and a couple days of editing. But if I were to finish the book now, I don't think I'll release it until September. I don't think the public would purchase something like this at the moment. I think the timing's wrong, and I'd rather wait till everybody's back in their normal frame of mind.
Well, that makes sense. So now you have a thing called the Horror Society. So explain what that is.
The Horror Society started back in 2012, January. There were a lot of people I was talking to who were beginning writers, and they were having issues about getting started and getting published. And basically all they had at their hands at that time was the endless supply of how-to books at the local bookstore. And most of the people bought them and followed their advice and still didn't get published. So unless you were willing to shell out over $100 a year as a starving artist just starting out, there were very few places that were willing to give you advice at no charge. So I was talking to two or three people that I knew, and I said, what if we started a group of people in the horror industry that have been in places before that can help others out with just advice, no charge, just helping people out? And everybody said, yeah, let's give it a shot. So they said, you can start it, Scott. So I took the lead on it. And the Horror Society has been around since January of 2012. We have 1,350 plus members. All are contributing in some way to the horror universe. You know, the original thought was, let's just open the Horror Society to writers and authors. Well, as its popularity started growing, I said, you know what? Why don't we help out the entire industry? So we started inviting actors and actresses and script writers and movie producers, artists, musicians, anybody and everybody that had something to do with the world of horror. And what we did was we actually created a community that can contact each other. Somebody comes out with a new book cover, they can put the book cover out there and ask for opinions, and we can fine-tune book covers together. If you wanted somebody to help you with a story that you're writing and you just hit a brick wall, we have authors that'll team up together and finish the story. If you're looking for an editor to work on your story after your work is done, we have editors that offer their services. So we have anybody and everybody that would possibly be able to help you finish a project in this group. At one time, Clive Barker was part of the group. I think he's faded as he's gotten busier over the years. But the Cenobites from the Hellraiser movies are here. And there's a whole slew. Ed Edmonds is here from, I'm trying to think of the work. He makes all the masks and hands and costumes. Tom Savini is part of the group. So there's a lot of knowledge in this group, and they all share if you have a question. We've done about 6 anthologies from the Horror Society every time we have time. We have editors that jump in that do the editing. We have artists that do the book covers. And we publish a book. It's probably been 2 years since our last one, but we were doing almost a book a year at one time. But life has just gotten busy, so we haven't had any new projects. Probably in 2022, we will do a 10-year anniversary book. So there's a lot of good things.
So can anybody join that Horror Society, or is there what's it take to do?
They can join without any issue. The only exception is we have people that do look into the individual to make sure it doesn't become a fan base because of a lot of the members that are here in our community. We don't want a fan getting into the group and contacting others for anything other than creative questions. We're trying to keep it as a working group.
So a serious group. Yeah. Like just writers.
Well, again, writers, filmmakers. We have everybody in this group globally. We have people in England, Australia, New Zealand, Japan. And it's just a matter that we like members that are looking to further their careers. Instead of just asking for an autograph.
So what's the, maybe give out the contact or the website so people that are interested, if they want to look it up and see what it's about and join maybe, where would they go?
They would go to Facebook, and it's a simple web page, and it's called the Horror Society, and it's closed, but there will be people there that will take your application if you ask to join, and they may call you and ask what you're working on and what your goals are to in joining the group. The one thing about the site that's different than most so-called Facebook groups is this is not a place to post your items for sale. If you come out with a book, you can post a new book cover and announce when it's being released. But if you post it with like an Amazon.com link or something like that, we don't permit it because we want to keep the material that's being posted to have some type of value to the membership. That if we let it get into just advertisements, it has no value, and there's no reason to be here.
Okay. So now, what are your plans coming up the next year or so? Do you plan on, you said you're going to release one maybe in fall. So you're just going to keep on writing books, or are you going to do something more, or what do you think?
Well, it's everybody's pipe dream to have Hollywood call them because the years of the 1980s paychecks for authors is no longer something that will happen. Very rarely will someone get a $40 million paycheck as Mr. King did or J.K. Rowling. It's far and few between for that nowadays. But what every author wants is they want Hollywood to call them and say, hey, we'd like to put an option on one or a few of your stories. And that's where the popularity really kicks in, and that will skyrocket that author's career.
Okay, then. So now, how do people find your books and get a hold of you? Like, do you have a website and things? And where do they find you?
I did have a website, and it took up a lot of my time. So instead of having it drag me away from my creative zone, you can reach me by Facebook, Scott M. Gorosak, or you can go to the Horror Society on Facebook. I just use Facebook because it's easy to manage, and I have assistance in helping run the Horror Society. So if my busy real-time life has me going in different directions, somebody else is always there and has my back. My books I primarily put on Amazon.com, and a lot of the anthologies that I've been part of, you could find on there also.
Okay, then. That's fantastic. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I'm glad you took some time. Just before we go, who are some of your favorite horror authors of modern time? Or do you have any?
Well, I like Stephen King in his early years. I really haven't read much of his newer material. Clive Barker, again, his earlier material. I have not read too many others at the moment. Dan Cohen is a great author. Henry Snyder, I think Henry's out of Colorado. I find his work very good. So there's a lot of great authors out there that haven't been able to penetrate the public because they don't have a big publisher behind them. But I definitely encourage someone that's looking for something new and refreshing to visit Amazon.com and just pick out an author that maybe you've never read before. You might discover a whole new world.
Yeah, that's true. Do you find yourself venturing in other genres, like, you know, let's say comedy or you know, romance or true crime or something else, history?
I did, and it just flows better if I'm doing horror. I have a few other works I have put aside. I'm my real-time job, I'm active in the pet industry, and every year I write a book called Fine-Tuning Retail Pet, and it's a basic how to make your retail establishment better. So I do dabble in a few things, but horror's where my passion lies.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. It's all good. Well, fantastic. So what we'll do is we'll have you, your books put up on our website as well. So anybody listening can go one click and find you and find your Horror Society page as well. I really appreciate you taking the time and filling us in on the world of horror.
Well, thank you, Al. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to speak to everyone today. And again, pick an author you've never heard of and buy a book, because you're going to be surprised that there's a lot of great work out there.
Fantastic. Certainly is. Again, our guest has been Scott Gorosak, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Al.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.